You are listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
They're back together again. Eric and Jeff are reunited as friends. Old Movie BS is back together again.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. I am Jeff Bear. This is Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, welcome to this show. I'm Eric D. Snyder. That's Jeff Bear, my co-host. Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, brought to you by OneOfUs.net. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. Do you feel fat? I do.
Yeah, and we're recording this before Thanksgiving.
That's true. Fat's out of the bag, everybody.
Still applies. Probably everyone who hears this will be after Thanksgiving. We hope you had a nice holiday and where there weren't any fights.
Yeah, although I would assume this is going to be the greatest potential in the American history since maybe the first Thanksgiving, as far as like potential fighting goes.
As for potential bloodshed? Yeah, probably.
And as our dedicated diehard listeners know, we start the show with an iTunes review. But we don't just like read an iTunes review and say, oh, thank you so much. We make Eric put on his little old-fashioned outfit, get into the closet, do that, hop right out, and get into character. And that is old-time radio voice presented to you right now.
Now I'm thinking I should get a costume for it.
I would appreciate it. I mean, I have to watch you do it.
This review is written by the Annali, A-N-N-A-L-I, the Annali? I don't know. She says, these guys are the best. If you want the hot skinny on the latest movies, don't miss Movie BS with Bear and Snyder. Jeff and Eric review all of the latest movies with insight and humor. As a longtime listener, I can say that these two have the best rapport of any podcasters out there. If you like movies, Jeff and Eric give you just enough information to let you know if a movie is something you want to see without giving spoilers. Their recommendations are consistently accurate, and they can also help you discover obscure gems that you might otherwise miss. This is an hour of great entertainment, even if you are not a big movie fan. For instance, some of us are middle-aged moms that want to impress our adult children by faking an understanding of movies we haven't seen. Thankfully, Movie BS has us covered. This podcast is also more than just movies. You'll enjoy suspenseful side plots, like Jeff's temporary move to California and the Summer Box Office Challenge. In addition, there are occasional quirky supporting characters like Eric's cat dog and Jeff's beverage of the week. Always thoughtful and funny. I say this podcast is an A+, 10 out of 10. Listener approved.
Oh, I like her.
Thanks, Annali.
I like her quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I've decided now that the only thing I wanted in college was the nickname The Hot Skinny.
The Hot Skinny.
The Hot Skinny would have been great. That would have been my dream.
Be a good nickname.
Yeah.
To follow up, you remember last week we had an iTunes review from someone named Fun Muffins who was upset because my B-minus review of Hacksaw Ridge wasn't positive enough.
Disgraceful.
Right. Well, I got curious, so I clicked Fun Muffin's name there on iTunes to see what other reviews he or she has written. And I found that he or she had also posted similar reviews on about a dozen other movie podcasts. Which, first of all, did you know there are other movie podcasts?
Never heard of that.
Yeah.
No.
We'll have to deal with that later. But yeah, apparently I don't. And now I'm curious, does he or she listen to like 10 to 15 podcasts and then went around like regularly and then went and reviewed them? Or did he or she go looking for ones that had talked about this movie and only listen to those episodes?
Actually, here's the thing that I'm most concerned about with he or she.
Yes.
Why didn't they just copy and paste their one? You said similar, as in writing different things?
Very different, yes. Different.
That's way too much energy and time for such a thing.
I agree.
Don't understand.
I bet I could tell this person is a big super fan of the true story that Hacksaw Ridge is based on. And so I don't know if this is just their passion. They go around defending this story wherever they can.
Well, you know what's going to be nice? I just got the screener.
Oh, yeah?
And I will watch it. And that way I can have an opinion, which this person already decided I had an opinion. So it'll be really nice to catch up and be the person this person needs me to be.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see if your opinion matches what they said it was.
Oh, I've already decided it does. I mean, they know me so well.
Sure, sure. And now let's talk movies. Specific movies.
How about this movie? Bad Santa 2.
The Reckoning.
Dun-dun.
Bad Santa came out 13 years ago. It was Thanksgiving time, 2003.
And a lot of you people supposedly couldn't celebrate Christmas fully and officially without a sequel. So here comes Billy Bob Thornton taking care of business.
I don't know if there's anybody who couldn't live without it.
No?
I do know that they were trying to get this sequel made for several years. And they definitely decided first to make a sequel and then started to worry about like what would happen in it or who would write it.
Yeah.
Went through a lot of that. But now, at long last, here's the finished product. And it is 13 years have passed. And Billy Bob Thornton. This is the second movie this year that begins with the main character trying to hang himself and being interrupted.
My goodness, why can't I think of the other? Tell me.
Swiss Army Man.
Oh, there we go.
Remember, he's about to die of boredom.
The problem was he was on an island, so I wasn't thinking of hanging.
Right,
But of course, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, obviously. Anyway, he's it's a good way to start a movie, a character trying to kill himself.
And in particular, the way that he's doing it, he's not that good at it. And of course, it's a nice surprise, but the kid, the original kid from the movie.
Thurman Merman,
who should have been saying his name, I don't know, 100 times more often.
I know.
Because it took so long for them to finally have him say his name, because all Billy Bob does is call him Kid.
Well, do you remember, I had forgotten this detail, but then saw it when I read my review of the first movie. Most of the first movie, he just calls him Kid. And it's not till, I don't know, the very end, but it's late in the film that we find out his name. And I agree, he should have been saying Thurman Merman all the time.
But anyway, he pops in, and they got
the same fat kid to play him. He's a fat adult now, a fat young adult. Yes, the same guy, though.
Simple as all get out, and for the most part, pretty amusing at it. And their relationship with each other is still pretty intact, amusing as well.
The focus, though, this time.
Yeah. The focus is Willie's mom.
Sonny.
And it's Kathy Bates, and it's an interesting dynamic between the two of them. And I kind of liked it. You know what I didn't care for?
What?
The inclusion, once again, of Tony Cox.
Well, yeah, as the dwarf elf. I assume they figured that it wouldn't be a bad Santa movie if it didn't have the elf, you know?
I guess it ran its course, and his side plot ran its course, and the potential of double crossing ran its course all very quickly. The one thing this movie has is shock factor banter. It had it the first time, and it definitely has it again this time. Like, there's a couple of lines where, you know, you find yourself laughing, cringing at the same time. Like, should I have just laughed at that?
Right. Right.
And that's good. And I really like the movement to Chicago. Like, I just like that city. I like seeing that city on the big screen.
Oh, you hadn't mentioned.
Yeah. No, I'm a fan.
What happens is this time he goes to Chicago to they're gonna steal from a charity, one of those bell ringing Santa charities, and Mom is involved this time. I like Kathy Bates. She's a good addition to the team, and she's always great at playing whatever she wants to play, which in this case is this white trash reprobate, just the female version of Willie. And in my research, I saw that originally that was supposed to be his father, and then they changed it to Mom instead. Just thought they thought Mom would be funnier. They thought the whole deadbeat dad thing is played out. And I agree. I think the mom is a funnier dynamic because when the first thing he does upon being reunited with his parent is to punch that parent in the face, it's funnier when it's his mom, not his dad.
It really is. Caught me off guard.
Yeah,
I did not see that one coming.
And there's plenty of that in the movie of catching you off guard. What it doesn't do, I mean, that's what the first movie did too, and it's a really delicate art to try to offend people and entertain them in equal doses. And this one is not nearly as funny as the first one. I would say it's equally filthy. And I was never, I wasn't ever really bothered by the filthiness, but I, there were definitely moments where I thought, well, that's gratuitous. They didn't have a funny line. Same problem I had with Sausage Party a lot. We couldn't think of a funny line, so we just threw in some F-bombs.
Yeah.
To spice up an unfunny line.
Yep. And it definitely does it. Like, the plot is acceptable. Is kind that's, of like, oh, yeah. All right, sure. I guess you technically can get away with this. But the way that some of these side plots are achieved, it just feels like they're treading water.
Just dragging it out, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's an hour and a half runtime, and it feels a little bit longer than that.
It does. It feels too long.
But again, thankfully, the kid, the Thurman Merman, comes back and helps out a little bit. Christina Hendricks is there. I'll say that, and her character exists on the screen.
She runs the charity.
It's really it's flat. It's not intriguing. There's no bite to it. There's no.
And let me tell you, one thing that Christina Hendricks is not often accused of being is flat.
That is true. But here, even though, you know, Billy Bob Willie gives her a lovely compliment about her body at one point, it still just kind of feels like a bit of a wasted opportunity.
Yeah.
You can't say that Kathy Bates was ever wasted in this movie. Like, she did her best with everything she was given. Christina Hendricks just wasn't even given much to do with and didn't liven it up in any way.
Yeah, there's not much with that character. I was just – her husband, the fathead, the co-runs the charity, named Regent Hastings, and that's Ryan Hansen from Veronica Mars. I thought that character had potential just for being a bad guy, and they didn't exploit that. And yeah,
they didn't.
With Christina Hendricks' character, there's not even really potential. She just sort of
And with this plot, you know, with them trying to figure out the safe, the timing, and all this kind of stuff, they kind of fall back on this almost bumbling, kind of bumbling security guard. And again, it's just it's a character that's flat, and it fills up some time. But you're really just kind of waiting for Willie to do something interesting with, at this point in this movie, either Thurman Merman or his mom.
Yeah.
Because that's where the gold, if there is any, comes from.
I agree. Yeah, it's those three, Billy Bob and Kathy Bates and the kid, Brett Kelly is the actor's name.
Yeah.
I more or less concur. You'll get some laughs here and there with, like you said, some shocking lines, some well-delivered shocking lines. Don't underestimate the importance of that too. Especially when the dialogue is written so that, like, for example, the mom character will say something and you know that Billy Bob is going to respond. And it almost doesn't even matter what he says. Like, if he says it in the right tone of voice and with the right timing, it will be funny as the response to whatever insane thing his mother has just said.
Agreed.
And it's all very well executed. There's just not enough of it. I give it a C+.
I'm a 6 out of 10. Pretty much right there with you.
Bad Santa 2.
Bad Santa 2.
Next up, Nocturnal Animals and Where to Find Them.
Almost. Just that first part.
This is directed by Tom Ford, who made a single man with Colin Firth a few years ago.
Heck of a movie.
And this Tom Ford fella, I guess he was some kind of a fashion designer, something
That's
like
right.
that.
Yep.
And then he just decided one day, hey, I'm going to direct a movie. And then he made that Colin Firth movie, and it was terrific. And then he made a second movie. So he just does this now.
This is his thing.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a Renaissance man. I believe that's what it means, right?
That you used to be a fashion designer, then started making movies?
Yeah.
Yeah. Handsome fellow, too. He's from Austin.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Or born there, anyway.
Huh. All right.
His birthday's the day after mine.
Now you're really connected.
Now, we're both Virgos.
Oh. All right. Heck of a cast here. Like a tiny role from Laura Linney, but then on up you got Armie Hammer, you got Isla Fisher, you got Aaron Taylor Johnson, Michael Shannon, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Amy Adams. And this is one of those films that is a story within a story.
A story within a story. This is based on a novel. The novel was called Tony and Susan, and I think Nocturnal Animals is a much better title for the movie.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And Amy Adams plays a fancy schmancy art gallery person in L.A. And she, named Susan, she's married to, who's she married to? Oh, Armie Hammer.
Hutton.
Hutton Morrow. Oh, that's as good as Regent Hastings.
Yeah.
In Bad Santa 2.
You know you got some money when you're named Hutton Morrow.
Hutton Morrow, yeah. She's married to him now, but she used to, 19 years ago when she was in grad school or something, she was married to Jake Gyllenhaal. And now, the Jake Gyllenhaal character, Tony, has written a novel. He sends her an early manuscript of it. And so the movie cuts back and forth between Susan's life, her ongoing, you know, day-to-day dealings, and as she's reading this novel, we see the novel acted out.
It's an interesting thing where as soon as I got a hint of it, my thought was, oh, well, I'm not going to care about this fictional story within this fictional movie. I just want the reality, like what's going to happen with Amy Adams. But very quickly, almost the like a 180 completely, in the sense of, actually, Amy Adams, this is not your bread and butter character. I'm not really interested in this white rich woman who happens to be sad with her existence because of choices that she's made. I am much more interested in this fictional tale dealing with Edward, his wife and daughter, and a great bad guy with Ray Marcus. Aaron Taylor Johnson does a really nice job here.
The story in the novel is, and the way we see it acted out, it's Jake Gyllenhaal playing this character, this fictional character he's written, and it's a man goes traveling through West Texas with his wife and daughter, and the wife is played by Isla Fisher, who, of course, looks a lot like Amy Adams. And so we get the idea immediately, oh, this is the Amy Adams character. Susan is sort of picturing, putting herself and people she knows into this story. She's picturing it in that way.
I would assume the only people or the only person that people think Isla Fisher might be besides Isla Fisher is Amy Adams.
Yeah, it's perfect casting. Great use of Isla Fisher.
I've been waiting for them to be like sisters in a movie, and then this happened, and I was like, oh, it feels like I was partially responsible, even though I had nothing to do with it.
And so, intended or not, Susan takes the novel to be sort of based on her ex-husband and her. And story in the novel is they are driving through West Texas and they get harassed by Aaron Taylor Johnson and a couple of other goons, and terrible things happen. And then the Gyllenhaal character is looking for answers. And there's a detective, police detective played by Michael Shannon.
Michael Shannon it's a role that's too small for Michael Shannon.
No such thing.
He's good with it. No, I mean, I know, but at the same point, you're just like, I need more Michael Shannon. He dedicated himself to this timing of this movie. He had, like, he's here. Let's use him in every scene because he is Michael Shannon.
Yeah.
But very enjoyable in this character.
That's how you get tired of people.
That's how you get tired.
That's how you get burned out on people. And then in the real world, I agree. Susan's life is problems with her Armie Hammer husband and everything else, and her art business and all that. The main thing is the psychological effect that reading this book is having on her. And Tom Ford, he's great, both of these movies now, great at visually painting a picture, at visually conveying themes. There's lots of match cuts where the action in the book there'll be physical movement, and then it'll dissolve to a similar movement in Amy Adams' real world. The back and forth with that, of making them blend together and thematically showing how they're all kind of connected. Lots of that. And some of it maybe doesn't matter, but it looks nice, and it gives it an elegance and a style.
It was Amy Adams in Julia and Julia, right?
Yes.
It's weird because that was a movie also where I was just like, you know what? Just give me Meryl Streep's character, remove Amy Adams. This is another one where I'm just like, you know what? Give me everything else. I mean,
you think all movies would be better without Amy Adams.
That's not what I'm saying, because you know Arrival's my favorite movie of the year. Hmm. I think she's really good at playing a vast variety of characters. Yes. This is one that is just terribly disinteresting to me.
But I don't think that's her fault, though.
I agree, but at the same point, I was thinking about it. There's it just seems weird when she plays like icy or removed or emotionless. It just doesn't work well with Amy Adams. Yeah. Where I was thinking about it as I was watching it, and I was like, oh, I need to see Jessica Chastain doing this role. That's somebody that I think would make me think or feel something a little bit more than what Amy Adams is doing
here.
Yeah,
she's better. She's better at iciness for sure.
So far, like Arrival, her performance, love it. Like nominate her, everything. She's great. I just didn't love her here.
All right.
And Armie Hammer, I just he's not like what
he's hardly in it. He's hardly in the movie.
He's not doing it for me. Period. That's
you know, he's not as interesting when there's not two of him.
Maybe that's it.
That's been the case pretty much consistently.
Just double hammer.
You need the double hammer, yeah. I really dug this movie. I don't know that I necessarily got everything that it was laying out there for me. Not sure that I picked up everything that it put down. But I like the elegance and the style of it. And I say elegance. It's also got like some very lurid and trashy aspects to it. But it's all filmed so lovingly, so beautifully.
Pretty much loved everything that Jake Gyllenhaal was a part of with this movie. Mm-hmm. Like loved. And it's so good at that.
We also say, as you mentioned, we also get flashbacks to his relationship with Amy Adams mm-hmm. 19 years ago. So we get more context for why they split up and all that and how that all factors in. This is one of those movies that feels like reading a good novel. It feels literary and smart, even if it's also kind of trashy.
Also feels like you can have a lovely conversation dissecting it and like just playing around with like, well, what do you think this meant when we saw this? Like, it's a nice layer on that too. Mm-hmm. I'm giving it an 8 out of 10.
I give it a B+.
Ooh,
that means it's BS approved.
Good job, team.
Nice work, everybody. Nocturnal Animals. And then next up, we're cranking through them, one after another. Next up, Rules Don't Apply.
All right, Warren Beatty.
So don't even bother.
That's it. They just don't apply.
Warren Beatty. Famed Hollywood legend, Hollywood playboy, Warren Beatty wrote and directed this movie. His first film in some time. Oh, my goodness. His first film as an actor in 15 years. I didn't realize that. He has not been in a movie since Town and Country in 2001.
Town and Country with Matthew Broderick? And Diane Keaton?
Yes, Diane Keaton anyway. Is Matthew Broderick in here too? Gary Shandling.
Oh, wait, State and Maine is...
Yeah, anyway. Yeah.
Town and Country, State and Maine, come on.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't realize that was the last time he was in a movie. Was that
big
disaster? I also thought that he directed Town and Country, but he didn't. He was just in it and wrote it. Anyway, this one, though, Rules Don't Apply.
Yeah, it's a love story?
Kind of. It's set in the late 50s. It's kind of about Howard Hughes, but mostly about the people who work for him.
Right.
Specifically, Marla Mabry, played by Lily Collins. And she's a new starlet, fresh off the bus from Virginia, and she's comes in to get a screen test or to do something, and then she keeps getting the runaround for a while.
She's getting the runaround, but apparently Hughes was known for having a bunch of actresses on the payroll.
Yeah, paying them and giving them a place to live.
Right, and so she became one of them, but she wanted a little bit more.
She wanted to actually like maybe do some acting, maybe.
Right, yeah. Right.
And so she's got a driver. He's got a driver, a full fleet of drivers to drive his starlets around, and that's Frank Forbes, played by Alden Ehrenreich, the new Han Solo.
That's right.
And he is her driver, and he has a crush on her.
Yeah.
You know where that's going to go, sure.
He's got a crush on her. He's not supposed to. It takes quite a while for it to develop.
He's got a fiance back home in Fresno, and his real dream is he wants to be a real estate developer, a land developer. You'd think that he would want to be a screenwriter, an actor or something.
You'd think something interesting he'd want to be, but nope, he just wants to build up some land, and he wants Hugh's help, to do it.
Sure.
But Howard doesn't want to take meetings because he's a weird guy. So then the movie just keeps going.
Howard Hughes, as played by Warren Beatty here, is, to start with, he's odd, he's idiosyncratic, but he's not he's not a lot, like not super strange. He gets more weird as the movie goes on.
Mm-hmm, right.
But it never really becomes about that. It keeps it kept feeling like this is a movie about Howard Hughes that for some reason keeps showing us what's happening next to him instead of him. Like it wants to be about him, but it keeps being about Alden Ehrenreich and Lily Collins instead. And I like them okay, but then their story kind of runs out of steam and not really going anywhere.
It completely runs out of steam. And the movie in general feels very flat to me. And moments are attempted to be juiced up by like the period music of the time, but it doesn't work for me, and that it just still feels flat. Like that's the only energy that seems to be trying to be zapped into this film. On occasion, there's some good chemistry between somebody and somebody else, but otherwise you just don't see it. Like, in all honesty, Matthew Broderick, for what, 90% of the movie, he's just kind of there, and you're like,
he's
why?
One of the other drivers along with
Frank Forbes. Why are you here? Why are you here, buddy?
It's sort of a creaky, lurching movie. There was one thing, Lily Collins' character, Marla, she prides herself, she doesn't drink, she's a good Baptist, and then suddenly in one scene, she's drinking, and she's drunk. And it felt like there was a scene missing, when she all of a sudden, she went from... Last we knew, she doesn't drink, to all of a sudden, here she is.
She might as well. Like, she has a might as well moment, and it doesn't feel like it's interesting at all. And then what comes of it, what comes of it, of course, is a song using the title Rules Don't Apply that Warren Beatty thinks is utterly dreamy and captures.
It's not a bad song.
It's not a bad song, but he thinks this will sweep everybody away that's sitting and watch this movie. And unfortunately for me, it doesn't. I mean, again, the only thing that I was mainly thinking was like, wow, this is going on a long time. And why is it not about Howard Hughes? Like, that's all I kept thinking, because this romance, maybe it's based on a lot of truth. I don't know. And I don't really care. Like, it never was something that interested or excited me, except for, like, the one-time possibility of, like, oh, maybe something's about to happen, and then it zags instead of, like, continuing on that momentum.
Yeah, the whole thing just feels like, what's the point? Why are you telling a story? First of all, what story do you even think you're telling? And then why are you telling it? I just did not have much use for it. I give it a – rules don't apply. I give it – let's see.
I give it a 4 out of 10. I didn't even think Lily Collins was that interesting, and Alden I felt like was pretty weak.
I feel like I've given like 100 C grade reviews this year. Every movie has been a flat C.
Not every movie.
Literally every movie.
Oh, okay. Sorry, my bad.
And finally this week, Moana.
Moana na, boop, boo, doo, doo, doo. Moana na, doo, 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 doo. Please tell me that was in it.
That's the theme song, yeah.
Sweet.
You didn't see this, so I'm just going to tell you everything about it.
Oh, thank you.
I filmed it. I filmed it with my phone, so I'll just show it to you.
It's perfect.
This is a Disney cartoon, as you may have heard.
This is the one after Zootopia, I believe.
This is the next one after Zootopia. Now, stop me if you've heard this before. It's about a girl, a headstrong girl, who lives in the middle of the ocean. She's got a kingly, overprotective father who fears the world beyond their realm and forbids her from engaging with it. But then after she sings a song about how she wants more out of life, she disobeys her father and goes on a journey and ends up saving the kingdom. And hang on, you're never going to believe this. It's from the directors of Little Mermaid.
They just figured they would wait it out. Mm-hmm. They'd lull us into a false sense of security, and then bam.
Well, sure. You stick with what works. They also directed Aladdin and Hercules and The Princess and the Frog. And, Ron Clements and John Musker are the men's names. And, you know, honestly, the first part of the movie of Moana definitely follows that template. But it doesn't do a bad job of it. And it's not like, you know, these Disney cartoons have proven many times that they don't have to be like innovative to be good. Often works perfectly well just to follow the formula. And as long as you hit the audience's heart and the funny bone, then it's fine if it's familiar.
And have a talking animal?
And Well, yes. No, there is a talking animal. Yeah, a giant crab, the voice of Jermaine Clement.
Ah.
He sings a song about how he likes shiny things. It is a musical. Two songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda and Mark Mancina and Opetea Foyai. I don't know who that is, but I figured I should say his name. The songs definitely sound Lin-Manuel Miranda-ish, if you've heard the Hamilton soundtrack. He's got a certain style. This character, girl, Moana, she's a girl, lives on this little island in Polynesia, and her father is the chief, and he says, no one, never go beyond the reef. We fish here in our nearby waters, but we don't go sailing out farther.
Sweet. Case closed. So this is a short movie?
Exactly.
Just like, they wrap it up?
Exactly. But they're running out of fish there by the island, and Moana feels drawn to the ocean, and turns out the ocean has chosen her fulfill this mission that will restore order to the island. And so that's when things get good, because that's when she runs into Dwayne Johnson. Dwayne Johnson plays Maui, not the island of Maui. That would be ridiculous.
He's pretty big.
He is. He plays the demigod Maui of Polynesian mythology. And he, years ago, we saw this in a prologue, he took a thing that they call it the Heart of Tefiti, and it's a little medallion, and it unleashed some darkness. And long story short, he's been in exile ever since then without his demigod powers, and now Moana needs him to return the thing to where he got it so that order will be restored and the island will be safe again and everyone will be happy.
Does he want to?
He doesn't really want to. I like this character, Maui, because he, before, except for that one wrong thing he did, he actually did do a lot for mankind. And I was not familiar with Polynesian mythology at all, but apparently this figure in the myth, he pulled the islands up out of the sea. He had a big magic fish hook, and he pulled the islands out of the sea, and he made the sun stay in the sky longer. He did a bunch of things that people of Polynesia still appreciate to this day.
Is this just your research, or is this also in the movie?
Both.
Oh, okay.
The movie, they apparently went out of their way to make sure they got it right as far as representing Polynesian
good.
Traditions and cultures and all that. But the character Maui is very vain. His introductory song when he first meets Moana is called "You're Welcome." So then we switch from the first template, you know, the Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast template, to the template where two mismatched characters have to go on a trip together.
Yeah.
And this is where it gets good. This is what the movie was really came here to do. That all that stuff previously with Moana and her dad was not where the movie's heart was. This is fun stuff. There's some good fun adventures. They fight some exciting monsters and foes, and there's an army of tiny little pirates that wear coconuts for armor. And the way they travel out on the water is definitely inspired by Mad Max Fury Road. Like there's some okay. overt specific. References to that there. And just a lot of fun. Almost, is there some I think there's some swashbuckling here and there as Moana and Maui are out there fighting villains and stuff and going on this journey. There's a chicken. She has a pet chicken. Doesn't talk, though. But he's really stupid.
Now, is there any danger in the sense of, like, did you ever feel like, oh my gosh, this, are they going to do that? I love when an animated movie can actually pull that off. Example being Toy Story 3. Mm. There's a point in that movie where I'm just convinced this is the end.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that I think the reason we remember that is because that's like the one of like maybe three examples ever where a cartoon has actually surprised us. No, there's nothing in this beyond the ordinary. There does turn out to be a story detail that I did not see coming. They kind of pleasantly surprised me of the way that, oh, that's interesting how that turned out.
Nice.
And so, yeah, it's good. It's good. It's fine. It's not great. The songs are good and fun. Nothing great, but good, solid songs. Fun stuff. Fun performances. Good banter. I didn't feel a huge emotional connection to it, but it's all very sweet and fun and likable. It's a solid B, Moana.
I was just going to ask if I could predict, and I was going to say you were going to say a B.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's good. Good and solid.
Good. I'll probably get around to it.
And those are all the movies this weekend, the big Thanksgiving weekend. Several options. Some good options. And there's still stuff from, you know, previous weeks still out there.
That's right. I mean, even like Doctor Strange, it's good, people. Mm-hmm. If you need to see something like that.
Arrival. If you haven't seen Arrival yet, you should go see that.
How have you not seen Arrival yet, well, listener?
It's only been out a couple of weeks, and it's a busy time of year.
That's
fine. Cut them some slack.
All right.
And then also, maybe you just never leave the house, and you just like to watch movies at home. In which case, we also have you covered.
That's right.
Because movies came out on DVD. Here's what they were. Finding Dory actually came out last week, but that's out there now. If you somehow fail to see Finding Dory over
the summer. It is... I've seen it a second time. You have not, right?
Right.
It's good. It's just it hits all the buttons that it needs to hit. It's a little less emotional than the first one, but at the same point, the cute factor with that little tiny kid Dory is adorable. Yeah. And it's good.
That was a solid B. That Finding Dory. Yep. Hands of Stone. You didn't see that was the other boxing movie about Roberto Duran.
I bet this would be the worst possible timing for me to see it after I saw one that was supposedly, you know, it was good enough for a boxing movie.
Yeah.
But this one's supposed to be a step below.
Step below, yeah. Hands of Stone. Unless you're a huge Roberto Duran fan or a huge boxing fan.
Or Usher.
Usher also is in the movie, yes.
Yeah.
Hell or High Water, that's out there now.
Mm-hmm.
We both like that. That was BS approved, as I recall.
That was definitely BS approved. And that's one that I think I'm really going to enjoy that second viewing of. Mm-hmm. That's my hunch. I want to hang out with these characters again. Ben Foster being the most Ben Foster-y that he can possibly be.
He is a maximum Ben Foster. You know what? He's Ben Fostest.
And there's a diner that I need to hang out in again in this movie.
You got a copy of the screenplay I saw at your house for your consideration. And I was flipping through it. I wanted to find that scene from the diner. And it's in there. And all it says about the waitress is that she must be 90.
Oh.
But then all the dialogue there, it's all straight the way it turned out in the movie. But yeah, the only direction they had was she had to be an old lady.
Yeah, that's that one category where I kind of wish there was like a bit part for Oscars. I've talked about that before.
Best bit part.
Yeah, best bit part. And, you know, man, woman, doesn't matter. Just combine them. Here's the five bits.
Every year, most years, it would go to someone in a Coen Brothers movie.
Yes, it definitely, most times, yes, it would.
Kubo and or the Two Strings. That's
very
now.
Nice movie. Very nice. I think I gave that an 8, just like I've given every single Laika movie an 8. It's good.
Yeah, I gave it a B.
You don't care about thinking about that movie anymore, do you?
This is how I felt at the time. I felt like something is wrong with me somehow. That it's I admire the movie, I like it. It's purely beautiful and imaginative, but it does not complete any emotional circuit. And
it is weird because all of those movies. I love stop motion animation, and all of those movies just look so good. But I haven't. Found one that I've fallen in love with.
Yeah.
I keep really liking them, but I have the tiny. You have a bigger hump than I do with those movies, and you can't quite get over it.
Can't quite get over it.
I'm sitting right at the top. I'm ready. I'm ready to get over it. You haven't even started up that little hump.
No, that's true. Mechanic Resurrection.
Not a real movie. You're making that up.
No, it is a movie, and I saw it.
Uh-uh.
I know you didn't believe me at the time. Not only is it a movie, it's a sequel to another movie. That also really exists.
Not true.
It's not good, The Resurrection.
Jason Statham.
Jason Statham, I gave it a C. You would watch this if it were on cable. But I can't see going out of your way to bring it into your home.
But would you watch it if you were flipping through your TV guide like everybody still does?
Mm-hmm.
And then you saw it was like the big Saturday night at 8 o'clock movie.
Mm. Ooh, the ABC movie of the week?
That's right. Would you make sure... to be in front of the TV, or is it a movie where you're like, what's this movie? How long ago did it start?
Well, I don't know.
I'll probably watch the rest of it.
Yeah, more the second thing. I wouldn't. Yeah. It's not appointment viewing. I would set the VCR, though.
You would?
Sure. Yeah, maybe check it out later.
Kind of tough to set.
No, I was a pro.
Oh, I was so good. I never messed up my AMs and PMs. Never.
Good for you. And then War Dogs is the other new thing. You know, I can't remember if we liked that or not. No, we didn't.
I don't think so. I think it was a big shrug of the shoulders.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, Miles Teller not getting it done this year.
Or not being in movies that get it done anyway.
Right.
So there you go. There's some more movies you can watch. There's a million movies to watch. I don't know why you complain there's no movies to watch, you guys. There's a lot.
I don't know if that's accurate. Is there really a million?
I bet there's been, well, not exactly, but I bet there's...
Oh, okay.
I wonder if there have been a million, if we just only include feature films, so 60 minutes or longer, have there been a million films released theatrically since the dawn of cinema?
Guess what, everybody? Somebody's going to be doing some Thanksgiving research.
I don't even know if that would...
Are you going to... Did this leak in your... Is this going to stick in your craw?
Well, now I'm just wondering how to even check that.
Well, isn't there a thing where it's like... Like, wouldn't Box Office Mojo just simply have, like, oh, there was 650 in this year
they
or something
only,
like that?
They really only have detailed box office records back to the mid-80s is the problem.
Oh, so you're going to have to go to a library?
It would require...
I think you might...
I bet the file.
What is that file film
of,
stuff?
Oh, the microfiche?
Yeah, you might have to do that.
I bet I would because I bet there's an issue of Variety at the end of the year every year that probably lists all of the films released that year or something like that. One of the trade publications. I bet. Anyway, there's a million movies. My point stands.
Figuratively,
there's a million movies.
Yeah.
Hey, Jeff. What'd you watch?
Sausage Party. So there's an idea for a movie. Sausage Party.
Oh, yeah.
It's an idea.
Where it's food that's alive. Like Toy Story, but with food.
Here you go. There's some funny parts. Like, definitely that opening musical number is good. I think you recall, I wasn't positive if I actually made it to the end of this movie because I was very sleepy in my...
Yeah.
Anyway, I did fall asleep. And then you and I watched the ending again.
Yeah, it turned out like the last like 20 minutes you hadn't seen.
Yeah, it was kind of funny.
Of this 90-minute movie.
I know. Even though it felt like it was like too long anyway. And it's definitely got some good stuff, but there's way too much Nick Kroll in it as a douche.
Yeah, and I had issues with that conceptually anyway. Because it's apparently not just food. It's anything that's sold in a grocery store comes to life.
Yeah, there's some iffy logic being used at times. But again, there's some funny stuff to it. Mm-hmm. Some funny stuff. It's weird to see an animated movie where you never feel attached to any character or care what they do. You're just waiting for funny stuff to happen.
Just the gags, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's just kind of an oddity because, again, like most animated movies, it's all about trying to get you to like some basic core emotion that you can relate to take you on this journey.
I mean, the South Park movie maybe would be close to that, but at least those were human characters that we kind of liked.
Yeah. Oh, it's a 6 out of 10.
All right.
Yeah.
What else did you watch? Anything else?
I don't think I watched anything else. What about you? Hey, Eric.
Huh?
What'd you watch?
You know, I watched Bullworth. Warren Beatty movie from 1998. I had not seen it.
Oh, really?
And but now I have. And of course, it's about a politician, a senator or something, who decides to cut loose and start swearing and rapping. And
Halle Berry?
Yes, she's in it. Mm-hmm.
That's right. And he raps.
He does rap.
Ugh, he raps.
Yeah, especially having just seen Rules Don't Apply, is interesting to watch this better Warren Beatty movie.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to see similarities between Bullworth and Trump as far as the...
There might be a few there.
The brash loudmouth who says whatever comes to his mind. The difference being that Bullworth is being honest, and that's what sets him apart, is he's saying, you know, what he thinks.
Right.
As opposed to lying constantly. But yeah, it's a good movie, Bullworth. I enjoy that. Glad I saw it. If only to take sort of the negative taste of Rules Don't Apply out of my mouth. To remember, oh yeah, Warren Beatty can write and direct
a
movie when he wants to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've never sat through all of Reds.
That's a good movie. I watched that several years ago.
Is De Niro in that too? There's somebody else in that besides Beatty. It's Beatty and Diane Keaton, right? In Reds? And then somebody else?
Yeah, Diane Keaton's in there. Jack Nicholson.
There we go, Jack.
Nicholson's in it. Yep. Yep.
So there it is. We loved Reds. There you go, everybody. There's our show.
You didn't see it. I saw it. And that's all. Oh, and I watched The Addams Family. The Addams Family came out 25 years ago this week. Happy 25th birthday, Addams Family.
That was a fun movie.
Yeah, it was fine. It seems like so much of the humor is based on Morticia and Gomez having the opposite opinion of things that you would expect people to have. Mm. Like, oh, this smells terrible. Yeah, isn't it great? Like all their dialogue is like that. I felt like that sort of runs its
course.
And
aren't they always, they're always horny, right?
Always horny, super horny for each other, yeah. Yeah, they have not lost the spark after years of marriage. Mm. Tell me something. Did you, like me, always assume that the Addams Family and the Munsters, that one was a ripoff of the other somehow, or a copycat?
Too closely related. I wouldn't say a ripoff or a copycat or anything, but it was always just like, clearly, it felt like you had to pick your team.
Well, and to me, I always assumed that clearly one of them, I didn't know which, but clearly one of them was made in response to the other one, like to capitalize on the success or whatever. Turns out, no. They premiered 6 days apart in 1964.
Really? Oh, yeah. I had no idea.
Nothing to do with each other. Both ran for 2 seasons, both about equally popular.
They only ran for 2 seasons each?
Yeah.
So I've probably seen every episode of
both
of those shows.
Here's the other thing.
30 episodes a season?
Yeah, the Munsters, let me find it here, 70 episodes. Yeah, 35 episodes a season. And awesome. Adam's Family was like 60. And when I was a kid, I never saw the Addams Family. Munsters was in syndication a lot. Like, I saw lots of Munsters reruns. Addams Family I never saw until the movie came out, and they started putting it back into syndication again.
No, I was very well aware.
Oh. Yeah, I just locally. Our L.A. channels didn't – we had Munsters. Maybe
I'm continuously shocked how much time I put into Nick at Night.
Oh, Nick at Night. See, yeah. But then that would have been – when would that have been?
I think it was still pre.
Before the movie came out, before 91?
Yeah. I definitely was watching it before. I was definitely aware of it before. Okay. And yeah.
All right. Yeah. The Addams Family. Well, hey, that brings us to the end of the show. And we talked about a lot of movies today, didn't we?
We did. We talked about the Bad Santa 2. That was one of the movies we talked about.
It's not very good.
But it's not bad.
Not bad, no. But it's not very good.
No.
Nocturnal Animals, on the other hand, is very good.
Yeah, it is very good.
And Rules Don't Apply, not good.
No.
And Moana is pretty good, pretty solid.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's it then. That's it. So until next week, for Movie BS with Darren Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Baer.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.